Hello and welcome to Will You Still Love It Tomorrow? I'm Dave.
And I'm Annie. Each month we take it in turn to nominate a film, TV show or book we were a fan of before we were married and the other one doesn't really know.
Then we both watch or read it and come together to discuss our reactions. Fair warning, there will be spoilers.
So this month, Dave picked the 1995 to 2001 adventure epic TV show, Xena Warrior Princess. Why?
I think mostly because I wanted to have a real difference from the last one.
It's pretty different.
I mean, I really, really enjoyed doing The Woodsman. It was great. And it really made you think deeply about a bunch of really serious stuff. And so I decided to pick something that was silly as what I hoped would be a sort of compare and contrast, but I think I've gone rather too far in the opposite direction. Listeners, let me just start out by saying, Annie said before we started recording, everyone likes a short episode, and I wish to point out that I have at least a page and a half fewer notes than I would normally do for one of these episodes.
Yeah, me too, me too.
So this may be very short. We shall wait and see.
So you were obviously a fan at the time.
So there was a lot of similar feeling stuff around.
Okay.
I mean, I put this in the same kind of genre as The A-Team or...
Okay.
Or like Knight Rider or, you know, that kind of really...
Right.
That kind of really silly kids' tea time TV shows.
Okay.
It's kind of like there's lots of violence, but nobody ever really gets hurt, and you know,
well,
all this type of stuff.
Yeah,
a mixture of comedy and really, really over the top action done on the cheap.
Yes, but they're both ostensibly real world contemporary.
Yes,
and this
true.
Is ancient world fantasy.
Yes.
But yes, I kind of see what you mean in tone.
Silliness. Tone. Yes, tone is exactly what I mean.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so what did you think?
Well, I knew what to expect because I did watch Hercules Legendary Journeys.
Oh, really?
I don't know why I never watched this.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I had been more aware of my bisexuality in 1995, I might have been... found it more appealing. I don't know.
I mean, what's super interesting is that there are a number of people I know who became aware of their bisexuality by watching this TV
show. It's possible that may have happened, and we will come back to that at the end of this episode when talking about what we're going to do next.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, but I never watched this one. But I did know exactly what to expect because I knew it was a spin-off of Hercules, and
yeah.
I was very well aware.
I can't remember Hercules, anything about it at all, really.
Well, it was pretty much the same, only with two guys instead of two women.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But yes, I would say, in terms of overall thoughts, when during the credits I wrote down, the power, the passion, the terrible acting, the ridiculous fight choreography, the shonky production values.
I mean, we can basically stop now, because that's really all of my notes, essentially.
Well, I have more to say than that.
Okay.
So it didn't hold up for you overall?
Not especially.
Really? Oh, that's a shame.
I mean,
you were laughing a lot in the second episode.
There are some very funny bits in the second of the two episodes that we watched, but what I remember, apart from, obviously... So for listeners who don't know about the show, and we'll talk about the characters in a bit.
I have a synopsis.
Okay. One of the characters is essentially designed to appeal to me, and that's the main thing that I remember.
Oh, Gabrielle.
Gabrielle, yeah.
Okay.
But the other thing I remember is that there were quite a lot of plots with really serious moral dilemmas
in
them. And... there wasn't a lot of that in the two episodes that we watched. The second one was...
I saw the first one.
The first
had quite a lot of interesting stuff.
The first one a little
we
bit.
We are massively getting ahead of ourselves.
Yes, and the second one was very silly. But I remember
that... why did you pick those? Shall I do the brief synopsis?
Well, I just want to explain why I didn't think it held up for me. Because...
Okay. Sorry.
Because, yeah, it was funny. And, yeah, the completely over-the-top fight scenes were highly amusing. But I remember it having, like, more depth to it, and it both felt like the episodes were very short, even though they weren't, and it just felt very kind of nothingy.
I was surprised in the opposite direction.
Oh, that's really interesting. Compared to how I remember it, because I remember it having a lot more kind of emotional impact and depth to it, and maybe that came in episodes that, you know, I just didn't pick the right two episodes, possibly.
Okay, well, I thought you picked them very carefully and that they were really good examples of two extremes of the type of show it was.
No, I just asked the internet what are the best, like, 10 episodes, and it listed them, and I picked two that looked interesting.
Okay, well, I'm giving you more credit than you deserve, then.
That's sort of the way, yes.
The overall synopsis: Xena, a mighty warrior princess with a dark past, sets out to redeem herself. She is joined by small-town bard Gabrielle. Together, they travel the ancient world and fight for the greater good against ruthless warlords and gods. So I'd be quite interested to know, without actually watching the rest of the show, why she suddenly decides that she's going to stop being terrible and redeem herself, and how she meets Gabrielle and they end up as a team.
I have to watch the first episode, I can't remember.
You don't remember.
But there's a lot of plot all the way through the 134 episodes.
Yeah, six seasons.
That repeatedly involve her bumping into people that she did horrible, horrible things to, either them or their family, when she was evil. So that makes up a great deal of the plot.
Yes, and that was the plot of the first episode that you picked, which was the last episode of the first season, where there is a young woman called Callisto whose family died in a raid that Xena did with her horde on her village years ago, and she has dedicated her life to becoming an incredible warrior so that she can then go around, rampage around, and kill lots of people and claim that she is Xena to ruin Xena's reputation. And I thought that the writing was actually really good, because it had an awful lot of really interesting things about whether people deserve second chances, about consequences of prior actions. And then there was interesting twists and turns where Callisto said, "You made me, and this is what I've become because of you." And then Xena has to actually face the potential of needing to kill other innocent people in order to protect Callisto, because the angry villagers are coming to lynch her.
Yeah.
So it was all, I thought it was quite deep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shall we do some facts before we jump into more?
Oh, sorry, I didn't have any facts. What facts have you got?
So, unsurprisingly, I have gone to Wikipedia and written down everything. So,
Find anything that interesting on the Wikipedia page, so go for it.
So, it was created by a guy called Robert Tappert, and to some extent also co-created by Sam Raimi, who is most famous for producing The Evil Dead and a bunch of other similar films, and also I think directed some of the Spider-Man films and various other bits. So Sam Raimi is like a big deal director. Robert Tappert has produced Darkman, which is one of my favorite, but not of films that are really underrated. It is one of my favorite ones.
I've never heard of it.
Oh, interesting. That might have to go on the list. Time Cop.
Love Time Cop.
Yep.
Awful, awful film.
Terrible film.
Loved it.
It's worth pointing out that Darkman is also a terrible, terrible film.
In a similar way, still actually kind of awesome?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's fine then.
But also, the other thing that Robert Tappert is famous for is a show very similar to this, which you and I watched all of after we got together, which was Legend of the Seeker.
With the hair.
With the hair and the... as also in this show, lots of highly inappropriate skin tie leather armour.
Yes.
So
I always remember having this theory when we were watching that the female protagonist really didn't like her costume and flipping her hair forwards so that it would cover up her boobs. And then every now and then the director would come out from behind the camera and put it back behind her shoulders again so that you could see her cleavage.
I remember
and
it well.
It would change throughout episodes, and I could just imagine this incredible hair feud going on. It was great hair, though.
I
was a bit disappointed in the hair in this. I was expecting better hair.
Okay. I like Gabrielle's hair. Anyway.
It was better in the second episode. We watched one that was at the end of the first season and one that was about 2/3 of the way through the second season. And her hair was much better in the second one. But
we are As
I'm
is so often the
very
case,
incredibly shallow.
we are, as is always the case, all over the shop. But just talking about the highly inappropriate leather armor, and you saying in Legend of the Seeker that sometimes it would be covered up and sometimes it wouldn't. They were obviously putting their stake very much into their opinion on that, given that there's a long pan-up Lucy Lawless playing Xena wearing the highly inappropriate leather armor in the opening titles.
Oh
So
yes. Yeah,
there's
they know what they're
really, they
doing.
know very much what they're
Yeah,
doing.
yeah. It's not
So
subtle.
as you say, it was a spin-off from Hercules: Legendary Journeys. Oh, we shall mourn for Kevin Sorbo's career before it went off into its terrible, terrible tangent.
Well, I mean, Hercules is pretty terrible.
Yeah, but he went off to become a stars in very, very Christian, you're all going to hell films for the last few
Oh,
years.
really?
Oh
No, I
yeah.
didn't know that.
Oh yeah. He's gone well off the rails.
Is it appropriate to say disappointed? No, that's someone else, isn't it? No, was that Hercules? Anyway, never mind.
But it just reminded me.
I remember being very attracted to Aeolus.
Yes, he was very cool.
Yeah, wasn't that keen on Hercules.
But it made me think that it's interesting how, I don't know about now, but back then TV shows were pitched because Xena, which was very popular, was a spin-off of Hercules in the same way that She-Ra, which was very popular, was a spin-off from
He-Man,
He-Man
yeah.
and similar sort of vibe from those shows.
Yeah.
So, as of many shows that have relatively minimal dialogue, women not wearing very much, and people being hit a lot, it was intensely popular. It's been shown in over 100 countries. As you say, there were, was it 6 seasons?
Yeah.
So 134 episodes, 6 seasons. In its second season, it was the top-rated syndicated drama in America.
Wow.
And for 6 years, it was in the top five. So the top five syndicated dramas in America for the whole time it was on. It was fast and loose with its setting, shall we say,
How do you
because
mean?
when it started out, it was supposed to be in ancient Greece, and you would see, I mean, Poseidon's in the opening credits, but also like Zeus turns up, Ares
Yeah,
turns
it's the
up.
Oracle at Delphi in the episode we watched.
Yeah, Ares turns up. Since we're doing spoilers, it turns out you find out in one of the season two or three that Xena is the daughter of Ares,
Oh, okay, that
and
makes sense.
she's really very unhappy about this.
That also makes sense.
And so that's a big thing. But it also wanders around various parts of the earth and spends a not inconsiderable amount of time with the Egyptian gods, lots of the Indian gods, Chinese gods, Central Asian gods, and bits of medieval Europe. Even though these are not only different pantheons, but also radically different time periods by like thousands of years. So it is a little bit random. They have a some kind of mechanism for explaining this, which is that the gods exist in the local areas depending on how many people believe in them.
Right.
And there's apparently, I was reading somewhere, a plot at the end of the last season where the Greek gods start to die out because of what they call the Great Love Religion, which is their term for Christianity, because for some reason they don't mention Christianity in this. But
Right.
they have this monotheistic religion turns up in Greece, and all the Greek gods start dying out. And that just sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
So, following the TV series, there was Hercules and Xena, the animated movie, The Battle for Mount Olympus, direct to video.
Right.
That wasn't very popular. On Wikipedia, it's got a list of its award nominations. It's got a very small number of wins. It's got a lot of nominations, almost all of which, 80 to 90%, I'd say, of which were for the music,
Oh, okay. Didn't even notice the
which was
music.
really interesting. I thought, well, only because I knew about this awards thing, I was listening to the background music
Ah.
In the show, and it's really good because it's mostly like vocal close harmony, so it's mostly people singing.
Oh, yes, now you say that. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
which is really good. So on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got a rating of 89%,
Wow.
and it's got a rating of 8.1 on Metacritic.
Wow.
So
Okay.
yeah, it's very popular.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Right, where do you wanna? What do you want? How? What?
She's got a really nice horse. Argo.
Argo. Argo's the boat in Jason and the Argonauts.
I guess.
I think it's the Argo, yeah.
Yeah, but she's very pretty.
I
Very
did.
well behaved, very well trained. But why do they only have one? Why does Gabrielle have to walk?
I've literally written down that. Nice horses in the show, but why do Gabrielle and Zeno only have one horse between them? It's this thing that
Yeah,
I've written
that
down
doesn't
on the
make any
thing.
sense.
They do, at one point in the first episode, one of the things that always highlights when a show set in a period where horse riding is very common, to highlight the show is very silly, which is we're going to get on a horse by running up behind it
And
and
leapfrogging.
then leapfrogging into the saddle,
Yeah, well, there were lots of quite ridiculous
which looks
acrobatics going
both
on.
painful to you and the horse
Yeah.
and not very
But it was
practical.
quite good because there were two moments, because Callisto, Xena does capture Callisto at one point and ties her up and puts her on Argo, and she's trying to get Argo to run away with her so she can escape. And Xena says, "Argo won't obey you, and if you don't stop kicking her, I'll break your ankles." And when Callisto then says, "When I eventually break free, I'm going to kill everything and everyone you love, including your horse," and that's when Xena stops and gives her a death glare.
Oh.
So I was quite pleased with that. And the horse is in it quite a lot, and she is beautiful. I mean, I'm sure it was more than one horse, but really, really beautiful horse. So yes, I enjoyed that. The Sam Raimi connection presumably explains why Ted Raimi is in the first episode. I
Oh, is
recognised
that
him from Sequest.
Joxer?
Did he have a name?
The
The one that Gabrielle keeps beating up.
Yes. So
Yes.
he is Joxer the Mighty, who is a
Was he in it more than once
Oh,
then?
he's in it a
Oh,
lot.
okay.
He becomes like a regular reoccurring character in the later seasons. He's in
Fair
like
enough.
every third episode
Yes,
for
I
like a
recognised
lot
him
of
for
it.
a very
Yeah.
different style of character as from Sequest, because he was kind of like this very straight-laced first officer in
Oh,
Sequest.
really?
Yeah.
Okay. He's basically the comic relief
Yeah, it took me by
through
surprise
most of
when
the
he
show.
was being slapstick.
He does, I can't remember what he does something in that episode and then he kind of looks in the camera and goes, "Masculine prowess."
Yeah, he was very, very silly.
So, well, the whole show is extremely
He
silly.
did give Gabrielle the opportunity to demonstrate how capable she was, and I was impressed actually. I was surprised that she was as physically capable as she is, because I thought it would just be her getting in trouble and Xena having to come and rescue her a lot, which did happen,
I mean,
but she
there's.
also does hold her own in quite a few fights.
So there's a mix. How capable of fighting Gabrielle is very related to what is needed in the plot at any
Yeah, well,
given
I can
time.
imagine, yeah.
So at one minute she's like, "Ha-ha, I will beat five people with my giant staff," and then, "Ha-ha, I have tripped over and now I must be rescued." So
Yeah, fair.
there's a lot
But
of
no,
that,
I
yes.
she had more prowess and more opportunities to look after herself than I thought.
Well, I do. I mean, I really like the character, partly because she's cute, partly because she's the one who can like read and
She is the voice of reason.
do the complicated things. But also, like Xena, she frequently is massively overconfident of her own abilities and therefore stuffs things up quite a lot. Just
Right.
because they're both, extremely sure of themselves in a way that often gets them into trouble. So.
But yes, she's also the, and today's, moral of the story is kind of
Oh, yeah.
person, because the first episode was all about the cycle of hate, and she said that the only way you can break it is with love. And the man who attacks Xena at the front, at the start of the episode, because he thinks that she has killed his son and everybody in his village. One point says to Xena that he'd been talking to Gabrielle, and Gabrielle had said that he had to kind of, let go of his rage. And Xena says, "People like us should listen to people like Gabrielle."
No.
It's very sweet.
It was. Yep.
But yeah, there was some, deepness to it, because right at the end, when Xena and Callisto are having their showdown, Callisto says, "There was a part of me that hoped you'd win and put out the rage in my heart. Sometimes it even scares me." And I thought, that was pretty deep.
It was a bit weird because Callisto says, "You've killed everybody that I cared about, and so to get my revenge, I'm not going to attack you. I'm going to ruin your reputation by killing lots of innocent people." So the morality is a bit a bit weird.
Well, yeah, I mean, the point was that it's not just that she's someone who wants to take revenge on Xena. She's someone who has been turned into a terrible person because of something that Xena did.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting.
So having her do that and be like
So,
that is more impactful on Xena to face up to the consequences of her previous actions.
and when at one point in time Xena says, I'm not going to kill you, I'm going to take you back and make sure that, you have a trial and justice. And she says, you were awesome as a villain, but now you're being good, you're kind of rubbish.
Yeah, I used to respect you as well as hate you, and now
Yeah.
I just think you're rubbish,
It
yeah.
is quite weird.
Yeah. But no, I thought the writing was pretty good.
And then they let her go at the end, Callisto,
They
for a reason,
didn't.
didn't they?
No, they handed her over to the authorities.
Did they?
Yes.
Oh, I missed that.
She had a
Oh.
moment of, glance to the camera and I'll be back kind of a thing. But yeah.
Just as an example of the incredible silliness of the acrobatics and stuff, there's a twist. I can't remember how it happens, but there's a twist when Callisto manages to trap Xena in a prison, and it's got stone walls and a thatched roof, and Xena goes back to the opposite wall and does a run up, and then does climb sheer surfaces. She like runs
Yeah.
up the opposite wall and then bursts out
Bursts
through
out of the
the ceiling,
thatch.
and
Yes. It was very silly. And when they were
just
facing
great.
off in their first fight, where they were just sort of riding past each other a bit like a joust.
Where they're
The
aiming their swords at each other rather than at the person. Yes.
ridiculous. What do you mean?
When you fight in a sword fight, this is one of the things that listeners, if you ever come across a YouTuber called Jill Barrett, who talks about sword fighting a lot.
She'd have a field day with the armor in this.
Oh, yeah. But the. She's probably already done it.
I
But
expect so.
the. If you look at really good choreographed sword fighting, the people are trying to hit each other with the swords. Bad choreographed sword fighting, they're trying to hit each other's swords with their swords.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes. But it
So.
was just the noises they were making. It was ridiculous. It was
Oh.
like watching the Williams sisters play tennis.
So this gives us an opportunity to leap into to sound effects.
It's a lot of squealing.
There's a lot of there's a proper phrase for it, but all African ululaling, that kind of
Oh,
stuff.
yes.
Yes, there's a lot of that, but
Ululating.
ululating. Thank you.
Yes, that was one of Xena's things.
But it's the only time outside of a cartoon that I've ever seen someone get hit over the head with something and get the Tweety Bird sound. The Tweety Bird sound was just amazing. I was just like,
Dear.
it's just telling you that it's essentially a
A
film, a
cartoon.
cartoon film, like a film cartoon. Yeah, so that was really,
Yes.
you get lots of swishy sword sounds. There's a bit in the, I'm sure we will get to the bathing scene in its own time, but there's a bit in the bathing scene where Xena is cleaning out Gabrielle's ears for some reason, and there's a very much
Squeaky noise.
squeegee on a
Yeah.
window noise, which is just
It was
brilliant.
very ridiculous.
Oh, so yes, it was
I'm going to
extremely
say
silly.
something that you will probably object to, but I really appreciated the fact that Gabrielle, whilst incredibly awesome and attractive in a lot of ways, was not over pretty.
Well, no. I mean, I had a conversation with a friend recently about the kind that kind of characters. We started with Cady Fry from Firefly, and then there's a lot of Willow Rosenberg in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and there's a lot of these very cute, slightly secondary characters that are very much written. I mean, for me, really, because those are the characters that I like. Were they, and they're definitely of an archetype.
Yes, absolutely. There was some forward resonance to Willow.
Was it?
Yeah, when Gabrielle said to Xena, "I want you to promise me if something happens to me, you won't turn into a monster."
Oh.
It made me think of Willow and Buffy.
Yeah. Well, Joss Whedon said he was heavily influenced by Hercules and Xena when he came to write Buffy
This doesn't
later on,
surprise me
so
at all.
yeah. Is that everything from the first episode? Do you have, because I read somewhere, Lucy Lawless, who plays Xena, is wandering around in small amount of leather and metal bits, and Gabrielle is wandering around in a like a crop top.
Yeah.
Kind of, but you know, more conventional clothes. And Lucy Lawless saying that it took most of the first season to be able to work out how to breathe while wearing her costume.
Yes. It's just stupid.
Yeah. And I don't know, have you ever worn leather?
I have a leather corset.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is it all right?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. There is a line in the, I'm going to jump.
I mean, I'm not doing acrobatics in it.
Also true. Yeah, the people doing the stunt work for this are obviously having a heck of a time, because there must be an awful lot of them standing on one end of a seesaw and then somebody jumping on the other end and flipping them up into the air onto a crash mat, because that happens several times per episode. So they must do a lot of that.
People getting punched and like flying several feet in the air and stuff like that.
Yeah, I suspect they had a lot of fun. I'm just going to pull a quick quote out from the second episode that we watched, where there's a guy who's fallen in love with Xena. And Gabrielle says, I guess some guys just love the leather. And Xena says, oh, I suppose I could change into my chainmail. Gabrielle says that would just attract a different, kinkier group of people.
Yes. Well, shall we talk about the second episode?
Can I just quickly check? There wasn't anything I've from the first episode. There was a seesaw battle on a ladder that's balanced on the tip of two other ladders, which is, I've seen it done before, but I don't think I've seen it done before necessarily on live action. That was very well done and extremely silly. Oh, one other thing, just quickly. There's a bit where Callisto is going to kill the Oracle of Delphi, and this is a very tiny part of the plot, because the Oracle doesn't even get any lines. But my only question was, why would the Oracle see it coming? So, yeah. I don't know. Yes. Sorry.
Well, it is prevented. So maybe she saw that too.
Well, maybe. Yeah. Okay. Second episode.
The second episode. So, well, the first episode dealt with quite deep and angsty themes of past mistakes coming back to haunt you, and what the consequences of your actions might be, and the cycle of hate that kind of is never ending. And the second episode was called A Day in the Life, and I think it was meant to be, you know, a typical day of Xena and Gabrielle going around and saving villages from different types of enemies. But it was mostly a meta-narrative opportunity for the characters to point out all of the stupid tropes from the previous episodes and all of the stuff that... Yeah. Yeah, it was very meta.
I mean, I'm fascinated to hear all of this, because I didn't really view it as that. I viewed it as basically an excuse to have Xena and Gabrielle...
Naked in a bath?
I mean, also naked in a bath, but I was going to say moon around each other a lot.
Well, also true. There was a lot of banter, there was a lot of flirting.
There's often in some of these kind of shows, you would say that there is a certain level of
subtext.
Lesbian subtext. There is no this subtext. There is only text.
But I thought it was much more natural and much obvious in the first episode that we watched, where they were just generally touchy-feely with each other and affectionate. Ooh. Whereas in this one, it was a lot more combative and a lot more overdone in some ways. And then when Gabrielle kisses Xena on the cheek at the end, she kind of bats her away and goes, ew! You know, so it was a bit stupid. But I really enjoyed...
I've read somewhere, there's a thing much towards the end of the show where that becomes canon.
I don't think that's ever actually...
No?
No. Oh, I think they've confirmed it in, like, interviews and stuff.
Oh, okay.
But it's not. Ooh. There is one where, I think there's an episode right near the end where Gabrielle brings Xena back to life by mouth to mouth. And there's kind of overtones and stuff with that as well. But I don't think it's ever explicit.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I thought the kind of, like, just the casual closeness and obvious affection with the whole thing of, you know, if something happens to me, don't turn into a monster kind of thing, was a lot more natural than in the second one.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed, it had, like, little chapter cards that came up.
With
the Greek, which I enjoyed.
Could you read the Greek?
I mean, I could tell you what the word was, and then
Okay.
I could tell you what it meant because it was translated right underneath it. But
Okay.
I don't remember my Greek. But yes, it was like right at the start. It was funny because it happened in the first episode where Xena incapacitated a warrior and kind of jabbed him in the neck and then said, "I have stopped the flow of blood to your heart and you will die in seconds if I don't release you." And then in the second episode, that she captured a warrior and jabbed him in the neck and she went, "I," and he said, "Yes, yes, you've stopped the flow of blood to my
Did
heart.
he?
I've heard." Yes.
I didn't spot that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there was the whole thing about how Xena always has to be creative in fights, and Gabrielle was annoyed because she ruined their only frying pan, and why couldn't she just have used an actual weapon? And all of this, it was all the way through, and all of the stuff, "Oh, another one's fallen in love with you again." And Xena was like, "Why does this always happen to me?" And I'm like, "Really?" That Gabrielle's the one who has to have the nicely conversations with people and kind of, you know, point out the hard truths in a soft way because Xena's got no diplomatic skills. It was all, let's point out all of the tropes and make fun of the show all the way through. That was the whole point.
Okay. I mean,
then there was the scene where they were both naked in the bath.
I mean, also true.
Which I enjoyed tremendously.
So Xena's main weapon is a thing called a chakram, which was a real weapon, which is...
It's really beautiful.
It's a metal disc with a sharpened edge, and you throw it a bit like a frisbee. And Xena's thing is that she can bounce it off multiple surfaces and then smack people in the head and knock them unconscious, even though it's got a sharp edge.
Yeah.
And then it will come all the way back around and she'll catch it again.
Without
slicing her hand off. And in this episode, it starts with some people wandering and going, "Ha ha, now she's ours," and very loudly, and then trying to stab her in her sleep. And it's like, you probably don't want to yell before you do that. But the first thing that she does is she picks up their frying pan and then chakrams it round the thing. And it was very amusing.
It was very, very silly.
So,
but I love a meta narrative, so I enjoyed that a lot.
But there were various things in that episode. I mean, it again fits in with your meta-narrative, where on the one hand there's a band of mercenaries, kind of, I guess, who are going around looting villages, and Xena used to be one of the people who was running that group.
Yeah.
And they know that that's going to one place, but then they're interrupted by this guy who later falls in love with her, who his village is going to be attacked by a giant. And Gabrielle says, "Two villages in dire need. I hate it when that happens. I guess we'll just have to methodically examine the needs of both villages and work out the best way to make a decision. Here is my list of pros and cons that I, as the only person here who can read and write, have written out on this thing." And then Xena just flips a coin and goes, "Let's go this way." It's just...
Yep. Yeah, so the first one had a lot of good writing in terms of emotion and ethics and consequences and whatever. And the second one had a lot of good writing for humour value, so I was quite impressed.
Yeah, I think my score might be going up. But the comedy value, we had a lot of fish to the face.
Yes.
We had a lot of fish to the face. We had Gabrielle going, why have you torn off part of my careful writing that I've been doing documenting all of our journeys? And we know why. It was because
she was Xena didn't have new toilet paper.
Yep, so poop joke.
We had Gabrielle keep trying to take Xena by surprise and
attack
her.
Yeah. There was a point partway through the second episode that we watched where Xena grabs Gabrielle by the hair from behind. She's wandering past.
Missed that.
Which looked quite painful. But there are also two different points where both Xena and Gabrielle, for slightly different reasons, slightly different points, grabbed each other by the bra, essentially, by the clothing at the front. I think Xena did it to Gabrielle, stop her running off, and I think Gabrielle did it to Xena when she was attempting to stand up and was just using it as like a way to
levered
herself off
the
ground.
Yes, she did. Yeah, she levered herself off of the ground by grabbing hold of Xena's boobs.
Which
that is true. I do remember that.
Which was
very silly.
Yeah.
It was the cheapest of cheap episodes. They had the giants up at the end, so that special effect was quite good. And they had a giant's graveyard where they had some giant bones that I don't know if they got made for the show or whether they got them from something else. But apart from those bits, the rest of it was mostly just standing around in a village, which was just a few huts made out of sticks and then people talking to each other. So it was essentially not much going on. It was very amusing. The guy who fell in love with Xena already had a girlfriend, and there was a whole subplot about her trying to get her boyfriend back, and what she eventually does is basically cosplaying as Xena.
Yeah.
I was not.
No,
not
I don't think that was a great.
Not a big fan
great
of that.
Solution to
no,
that.
No,
subplot.
That was not my favourite moment. Gabrielle says to get this. No, Xena says maybe to get this guy to stop following me around, I could just kick him about a little, and then Gabrielle says, I think he'd probably like that.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, and the backwashing. I did find it interesting that Renee, the one who plays Gabrielle?
No.
Renee somebody. But anyway, her and Lucy Lawless are obviously actually naked in the bath, because at one point Lucy Lawless turns round and stands up facing away from the camera, and I'm like, oh, I assumed you were wearing a swimsuit under the waterline. Apparently not. So that was quite surprising. Yeah, that's about all of the things I have specifically about episode 2. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to the cinematographer, because there's some lovely long sweeping shots, and the way that they catch the acrobatics, and a lot of the lighting is really clever, so it's shot very well. And the way the special effects worked on the giant in the second episode, I thought were really well done. So yeah, it obviously had a lot of good people working on it, starting with the music guy, the stunt director, and the cinematographer. So they've obviously, they've got a lot of good stuff. But just going back to what you were saying right at the start, I can't remember what the four kind of things you said right at the very start in order to sum it up, but one of them was acting, and the acting is
it's so bad.
Lucy Lawless's character is supposed to be, I don't know, emotionally repressed or something, but she's always talking in a very grim, I do not do that kind of thing for whatever. And so it must have been, imagine doing 134 episodes of that, just no fun doing that at all. But there's some amazing gurning expressions to camera, so it really overplaying the facial expressions all the time.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was all very caricature and slapstick and over the top.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of diversity, you've obviously got two very strong, very different female protagonists.
Yes.
You've got the not so subtle queer undertones.
Straight in the text.
And it was confirmed in interviews, but I mean, apparently in the show, that even before Xena met Gabrielle, she had both male and female lovers, so she is bisexual.
Oh, really?
So bisexual representation, yay.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The soldier that gets incapacitated and says, yes, you've blocked the flow of blood to my brain, I've heard all about it at the beginning of the first episode, is black, but
I completely forgot he was there.
He is the only non-white person in the whole of the two episodes, I think, that we saw.
Yes, I mean, there's
possibly the giant.
Possibly. There's more of that when they go to other places, because obviously the Egyptian gods are, I think, are kind of like Egyptian, and the Indian gods look Indian and stuff, but there's not really, like, here's a lot of multi-episode long running non-white characters.
No.
So
not that great from that point of view.
Mm.
But yeah.
There's a lot, because our diversity sections is gender, race, mental health, disability, and robots. Sadly, no robots in this episode. But
I haven't had any robots for a while.
That's true. But there's a lot of stuff about mental health in the series later on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, because of so many characters who've been heavily
traumatized
by everything. So there's a lot of dealing with the trauma in later episodes. So that was really good. But I think I'm pretty much done as it goes.
Yeah.
Hmm. So unless you have anything else to leap in with, that about wraps it up for this month's discussion. So As regular listeners will know, time for the ratings. We use a standard 5-star rating system with half stars allowed. What do you think for Xena, a warrior princess?
I was going to give it 3, but I think I'm going to give it an extra half star for the horse. 3.5.
Okay.
How about you?
See, I was going to give it 2.
Oh.
And then you've talked me up, not just to 2.5, but I think possibly to 3.
Okay.
I think you've talked me all the way up to 3. So.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, biggest question of all, you didn't really still love it?
I didn't really still love it. I think that if there were some arcs in later seasons, and I think some of the stuff like the interaction with Ares and some of the different pantheons and some of the longer arcs with more of the, you know, dealing with the trauma of having to do things and more of the moral dilemmas would be better. I'm sure there's some good stuff in there.
Right.
But I think you don't necessarily get it by picking a couple of random episodes from the first 2 seasons. So, yeah, I mean, it was fun, especially the second episode that was very funny. But I didn't remember. I remember the show being very silly, but I didn't really remember it being funny. I mostly remembered it having, you know, dramatic moral dilemma of the week type impact, and we didn't really see much of that. So yeah, it was fine.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. So you said you wanted to carry on doing some more dark and serious stuff, and I do have some of that left on the list, but because of this, actually, it follows on really well, but in a completely different way. And because I am reading the book that this TV show was based on at the moment, and I want to rewatch the TV show when I finished the book, I want to do a TV show that came out the year after this finished and was pivotal in my bisexual awakening.
New guy.
Tipping the Velvet.
It's one of those things where we have to decide if it qualifies, because I've seen it, but I remember essentially nothing.
I think that's fine. As long as you're happy.
Yeah.
We've seen it on stage as well, as you watching the TV show.
Yes. But I remember basically nothing about it, apart from the fact that it was really good. That's the only thing I remember.
Cool. Well, I want to watch it again, and I thought it would be a good thing to talk about, and it follows on quite nicely. Mm-hmm. It's very different in tone, but definitely not in queerness.
Okay, cool.
So that's it for this month's episode of Will You Still Love It Tomorrow. Many thanks to Cambo for our theme music, and thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you have any comments or like to tell us about a time when you shared some media you love and whether or not you still loved it afterwards, you can always email us at willyoustillloveit@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you.
You can also now follow us on Blue Sky at still-love-it.bsky.social.
And always remember, you can buy our merch at bit.ly/love-it-tomorrow-podcast.
So please join us next month to find out what Dave thinks about Tipping the Velvet.
And whether or not Annie still loves it after our discussion.
I think, you know, a bit of a spoiler, but I'm pretty sure I will. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.